Hello, everybody, and welcome to 2019. We are kicking off the Enterprise Dish here, back again. 2018 was a banner year. Obviously, we started the show in 2018. It was received very well by you all, and we continue to grow. And as we continue to grow, we look for new avenues and different ways that we are going to explore and expand the coverage of the show. And one of the ways we're going to do that is actually I'm going to introduce a new speaker here. His name is Aaron. He works at Smart Deploy, actually. Well, he'll tell you a lot more about himself, but he knows a lot about the industry. He knows a lot about Windows 10, and I think he's going to bring a new perspective to the show that we don't get with Rick and Dux. Now, Dux and Rick are great friends, but they all have their own unique areas, and I think Aaron is going to complement them very well. And with that, Aaron, I'm going to kick it over to you and, just tell the world who you are.
Good morning or good afternoon. My name is Aaron Suzuki. I'm the CEO of Smart Deploy. Grew up as a farm kid in rural Minnesota and got into tech shortly after finishing a geology degree and fell into, web development. And it kind of took off from there. Learned a lot about web standards and hosting and coding and IT and all those kinds of trimmings. And as luck would have it, fell into the great world of Microsoft in the early 2000s and started making software in 2007. And the interesting thing, I think, that maybe people don't know or realize is that we really weren't trying to start an imaging product per se or a Windows management product. We really were trying to do smart things with virtualization and consolidating virtual machines, optimizing for storage, taking advantage of things like virtual machine portability, automating virtual machines, making it more accessible to lay people, which was not very easy in the early days, and in some ways still isn't necessarily all that easy. Mm-hmm. But things kind of took off and the product really kind of found its own niche and started telling its own story as to how people wanted to use it. And that, of course, drew us more into this whole world of Windows. And in those days, it was all Windows XP. And that was a very interesting ride and seeing the evolution from that and riding the whole Vista train and on and on and on through to today, right? And we're in a very, sure, very interesting situation today with the way that Windows 10 is working. And so I think it'll make for a lot of very fun and lively conversation this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a lot of things going on, but you've it's funny how you say you just kind of fell into this career. Mine is the exact same way. I mean, I started as an internal auditor many years ago and was doing some blogging and stuff on the side. And, you know, those things just happen. And it's funny, too, because you're located in Seattle, correct? Like, you are literally in Microsoft's backyard.
We are right in between. We're in the neutral territory, equidistant from Microsoft and Amazon. We moved recently and relocated our business, and we are now very, very close to Microsoft. Oh. So it's territory that, you know, a road that we've driven hundreds, if not thousands of times to meet folks over there and, spend time with the best and brightest. But yeah, it's certainly an ecosystem and an organization that we understand, I think, reasonably well, if not very well. And, it's given us insight into the way that they do certain things. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll be a useful and I think fascinating thing for a lot of listeners as well, is that what happens in order to make Windows go is nothing short of a miracle.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is an extremely large, extremely complex piece of software, Windows itself, much less making it, you know, capable of supporting all these apps and all the things that Windows does is truly amazing. So the engineering feat is, you know, it's something to be respected and admired, and understandable that they don't always get it 100% right.
Yeah, Microsoft told me this at one point, and I've yet to have anybody ever correct me, and I would love it if they would. But I've been told multiple times that Windows is the most complex code base on the planet.
It's amazing. The thing that I've learned and appreciated over time is that some of my friends are coders on the Windows team, and you'd think that, oh, they must know this or that, but it is so big and vast that the thing that they do is extremely specific, and they therefore become literally a world's expert on a given topic or technology, whether it's print or Bluetooth or, you know, some of these things that we just take for granted. Like it's a given, it should just work. No, it doesn't just work. It is incredibly complicated, incredibly difficult. And the fact that Windows is designed and intended to run on this broad set of devices and all these applications, and that generally it works, is really pretty amazing. Yes, it goes horribly wrong on the regular, got it, right? And release problems and all these things, and all these things that we'll get into this year, but pretty admirable feat month to month and year to year.
Yeah, and it, the thing is, and I am fully guilty of this, is we get caught up, obviously, when things don't work. But you got to remember, too, that Microsoft, they said, I think it was maybe last week or the week before, there's 1.5 billion PCs. If just a very, very small fraction of those have an issue with an update, it impacts tens of millions of users. It's monumental how just a minor thing can really blow up. But it also underscores the fact that Windows is just insanely complex by its very nature.
Sure, and quality, right? Yes. What does quality mean? And does quality mean 100%? Would we expect that from our vehicles? You know, and I've got an old pickup truck that I love, and I refuse to get rid of it. And the seat squeaks, and it has for a long time, which is uncharacteristic of the make and model vehicle I have. But if that's the only thing wrong, I'm really not worried about it. Well, the equivalent of a squeaky seat in a PC might be, you know, I don't know, task manager not working right or something like that. And what does that mean to us, right? Especially to those of us playing in IT roles. Well, it could mean quite a few far-reaching and impactful things, right? I mean, and that's sort of the weird, twitchy world that IT lives in.
Yeah, it's... And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to bring Aaron on. There's multiple reasons, but he has a really in-depth knowledge of Windows. I mean, that's what you guys do, correct? That's Smart Deploy. Well, it's right in
for sure. Yes, and so we for a long time it was desktops and imaging and so on and so forth. But really, the effort and energy has been almost exclusively on Windows and the application platform created by Windows. And the reason why is that most of us work on Windows devices. It's overwhelmingly what's used in business. And if more people wanted, you know, Mac or Chrome or something else, then we would start addressing that too. But today, it is such a very small fraction of the user base that for us, for our time, effort, and energy as an independent software company, you know, self-funded, doing it our own way, just trying to make people happy so they'll stay with us, it's really the right thing to do. So the nice thing is it's given us an incredible degree of focus and an incredible insight that I think a lot of organizations like ours don't or haven't had. The drawback is we don't necessarily speak to, all the platforms and contrast and compare and know everything about every nuance ever and, up-level discussions and things like that. But yes, there's certainly an insight that we have and an expertise that we've accumulated that I think is unique in the industry.
For sure. And we're going to be diving into many different facets of that in the year ahead. I'm sure we could probably spend multiple hours doing it right now, but for the courteousness of the listeners, we will kind of move forward here. But one of the things we are definitely going to be doing on this podcast, mostly because Aaron and his company are very good with Windows 10, is talking about Patch Tuesday. Patch Tuesday happens typically the second Tuesday of every month. Sometimes Microsoft will throw a wrench in there and push out a patch other times. But one of the goals is to try to dive into that more because we know that impacts everybody on a Tuesday. And we're going to kick this one off. This one has been a little bit interesting. So Microsoft obviously pushed out a Patch Tuesday here. And the big headline was, and we don't necessarily have to dive into this one, but it screwed up some Windows 7 installs. We haven't seen that in a while, at least not too publicly. It's usually been, hey, it messes up Windows 10. But multiple questions for you here, Aaron. What are you seeing on Windows 7 right now? Because this is a big year for it. And do you remember the last time a patch messed up Windows 7?
I don't really remember the last time a patch messed up Windows 7. But what I do remember is that when in the past, when you've gotten into that kind of long tail, end of life-ish support for older operating systems, sometimes those issues creep in. And so, this is a nice incentive. I don't believe that this is deliberate or this is some kind of, backhanded effort to get people to finish the migration job. But I think, you know, as more and more people move to Windows 10, Windows 7 becomes less in the foreground, these things kind of happen. And then what do you do, right? Yeah. I mean, got to kind of figure out what your strategy is and how to get there and whether that might give you an incentive to accelerate some of those migration projects and how to think about that. You know, we saw similar things in the Windows XP timeframe, and there were so many other complications and challenges with getting off XP that there were some extraordinary efforts to make it possible for people, especially large enterprises, to have the time and elbow room to do that and have the support necessary to do that and decrease risk. But that's really what it's about, right, is managing risk and for organizations to keep things in check as they carry out these processes.
Yeah, one individual who watches the show said that they referred to Patch Tuesday as patch and pray, because you patch, right? You're trying to protect yourself the best you can, because Microsoft says, hey, there's an exploit, especially if it's a zero day or whatever. So you patch so your company's secure, but then you also patch hoping that Windows 7 doesn't break. So on kind of that awkward note, or whatever you want to call it, what is your philosophy on patching? Are you a day one subscriber? Do you sit and wait it out? When a new patch comes out for Smart Deploy to your org, what do you tell your IT guys?
Test. I mean, there's sort of a balance you have to strike. And part of it is just educating yourself. And maybe in some delightful way, we end up playing a part of that education for people this year. But either way, you need to go to the authoritative source, which is Microsoft themselves, and be able to ferret through the rhetoric of this is going to be great for usability, and it's going to be great for productivity, and it's going to be great for security, and realize that what is it that I'm installing, and what are the potential implications of this? Where is it going? What is it doing? And then you can make a calculation on what the risk is. Okay, if this is going to be something that's landing in a relatively benign place and something goes wrong, maybe it affects 2% of our user base, that's probably okay, right? We can live with that. Let's roll it out. Let's be a little bit more aggressive. If you have a number of sensitive apps that rely on a service or a component that might be affected by an update or a patch, then you really have to proceed with caution. That's a time to do a lot more testing. Lay down that image, take a test device, lay down the image, patch it accordingly, fire up the app or apps in question, make sure that everything's going to be okay. Because, of course, what we don't want to do in IT is make people's lives worse. Mm-hmm. That's the attention we don't want. Things are best in IT when we don't even exist, right? Yep. When people forget that we're here, that's when it's going well. You want to remind people that you're here by doing great things for them and giving them great support. What you don't want are the emergency calls to your desk when things go horribly wrong. And so sure. I think the I don't know if it's advice, but the thought is that, you know, give yourself positive visibility by communicating that, yes, we're aware this patch is out and that there is this risk, but here's the tact we're taking with this risk. Mm-hmm. Here's the course that we're going to follow in order to carry out this testing, albeit in an expedited fashion because of, you know, the 0 day, whatever might be going on. But it's worth it to make sure that you don't throw a wrench in things, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I think that's a pretty good philosophy in life, right? Don't screw it up. Make life easier for everyone. I mean, that's sage advice. And so roughly 52 weeks from today, Windows 7 for the mass market, unless you're willing to pay some serious money to Microsoft, is going to reach end of life. And they're going to sunset that product. And while Microsoft isn't telling us explicitly how many people are still in Windows 7, we can ballpark it based on numbers to be 300 to 400 million people are still running Windows 7. We don't know how many of those are in the corporate world. Microsoft did tell us that over half of their corporate customers are now on 10, which also means that there's still a whole bunch of people still on 7. What is your kind of hot take, or what are you thinking is going to happen in the year ahead? Do you think everyone's going to migrate? You know, what's your gut feeling here?
I think that, well, this is supported by some data, right? So we have, you know, anonymized sort of PII scrubbed insight into you know, kind of trend wise, how much 7 there is, how much 10 there is, mm-hmm. how much 8 there is, 8-1, you know, how much XP there still is. And you might be surprised that there's still a little XP and even, you know, even lesser extent, a little Vista floating around. Windows 7 is going to go away in business. And I think it will, the overwhelming majority of people will finish the job this year. And I think if you look at business, most organizations probably have the project started or mostly done anyway. We don't know many people who are still all Windows 7. And I think that if you looked around and asked people, they would probably agree. The question is, who's remaining on 7 and why?
Yeah.
What's in the way of finishing the job? What has to happen? Is it an app compat issue? Is it a, is it just a straight up, people continuing to be productive issue? Is it a training issue? What's going on? The leap isn't that major between 7 and 10. You can dial 10 back and dumb it down to make it more like 7, so to speak. And I mean that in the nicest way. But make it so that the usability delta is insignificant or zero for users. And in that way, remove some of those encumbrances. So long story short, I think that we are going to see it, unlike XP, mm-hmm. that, you know, everyone's like, oh, this is the year of XP migration. It's all going to go away. And then it didn't. Right. And then, oh, and the next year, oh, it's going to happen again this year. No, it didn't. You know, and there was all this back and forth. The migration to 10 has been, and certainly a lesson learned, I think, for Microsoft, the migration to 10 has been smoother and faster and easier and cleaner and mm-hmm. for a million reasons. And part of it was businesses learning from it as well. But I also think that that doesn't mean that it was an ace for everyone either. There's a lot of work that goes into it.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those predictions that we'll get to circle back on.
Oh, boy.
Right? It's, yes. Yeah. I mean, I tend to agree with just about everything you said. I think we're going to see a lot of those people holding out move this year. There's no reason not to. You're absolutely spot on. Going from XP to 7 is much harder than it is going to be going from 7 to 10. And there's also a lot more documentation and everything else this time around. So getting that over that hump should be a lot easier. Provided people start in time, I think that's going to be the biggest inhibitor at this point. Is people saying, I'll start in June. Give me 6 months to get off this thing. And then,
yeah, and part of this too, one thing I didn't touch on that I think is really relevant might be financial, right? Mm-hmm. Because in a lot of cases, this might be a unilateral hardware and OS sure. migration, right? And that's not cheap, right? You're talking about devices at, $1,000 to $1,200-$1,400 a pop, plus your OS license and all the trimmings, and it's gonna, that plus the project expense mm-hmm. of getting all this done. This is not a trivial undertaking for anyone on any level. It's a hard decision for the CIO. It's a hard decision for the CEO, and it's a major, major project for IT at a low level. So this is something that people aren't taking lightly and shouldn't, mm-hmm. right? I mean, this is a big deal. And once we're there, then sort of it's this brave new world of Windows 10. And what does all of that mean? And how does that play out? And I'm sure that'll be a big discussion as we proceed through the year as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because there's a lot. I mean, we don't want to dive into everything today, but there's a lot that goes on once you're on the other side of the fence. There's a lot.
Certainly
that goes
on. Certainly. And I think that people are learning a lot more about that as they go as well. And I think if we're being honest, Microsoft's learning a lot more about that, right? What was being preached about Windows as a service and the story that was being yes. spun and what actually played out mm. are very, very different things, right? The way that it was, I guess the acronym was being applied was maybe different than the actual way that everyone assumed that the model would work. And they're converging more on sort of being true to the acronym, but we're still not all the way there. So I think closing the gap between the assumptions and the reality and getting everyone to understand exactly what that means, what that changes for them,
yep.
what that maybe more importantly doesn't change for them might be, maybe the most important consideration of all.
I was sitting in the room when Terry Myerson was on, I think he was on stage. Or I can't remember if it was a pre-brief or on stage. Said, hey, we're going to get everyone to upgrade every 18 months. And there was an audible, the room was dead silent. And there was one guy let out an audible, very loud laugh. And like everyone kind of looked at him, and obviously he got real red, but he knew that he's like, there's no way that's happening. And now we're up to 30 month cycles on Windows 10. So we will see.
Exactly right. And the reality is that this whole release cycle with Windows 10 and the way that it's working in terms of twice a year really is not that big of a departure from the service pack model mm-hmm. of days gone by. And I guess that makes it even more complicated in a sense, because you may assume that it's sort of just a regular course of business, you know, twice a year update, but there are all these other trimmings in there. So it's not unlike the patch discussion. But kind of on steroids, where you've got to consider what's in there and on what time frame. And of course, the last October experience was, it was the last October, whatever the last major update that caused the data loss was a major, major lesson learned for a lot of people.
Yep, 1809. That was one they pushed out the door, then they clawed it back, and then they waited a month. And yeah.
Right. And a lot of people are still waiting right on whether to make that move or not. And so... Yeah, I think the thing that we learned is as time has gone on and a lot of promises have been made and really the story has been spun a lot of different ways, what we've realized is that really Windows is Windows and it's going to continue to go the same way. And the way that you, you know, live with it and work with it in IT as a, you know, IT professional, a desktop support person, an IT manager, a DevOps person, it really is... you know, a series of incremental changes that over the long term result in something fairly monumental. But day to day, it's really more or less business as usual, even with some of these big announcements and changes and sort of stories that are being told.
Excellent, excellent stuff. Well, Aaron, as we wrap up this inaugural session for not only 2019, but for you as well, one of the things we do at the end of every episode is what we call the dish. And it's for you just to kind of bring up or talk about anything that is honestly going on in your life, things you want people to know, your hobbies, your interests, anything just to help the reader and, listener just better understand who you are. So for the next couple minutes, it's the dish. And what you got for us today?
It is snowing. It is snowing in North America, and I think everyone should get out and experience the wonder of winter. Now, for people who are south of whatever that parallel is where it doesn't really snow, you know, Arizona, you got to go farther to get it. Mm-hmm. Texas, you got to, you know, everyone goes to Colorado to get it, but it is a wonderful time to go seeking the snow. It's amazing. Snowflakes are amazing, you know, and there's a reason why they're six-sided, right? And it goes back to mineralogy, and this is the geology geek in me. I just can't help myself. But it has to do with the structure of the water molecule, right? Which looks like Mickey Mouse with the oxygen atom with two hydrogens on it, like Mickey Mouse's ears. And the way that that then plays out is in this beautiful six-sided crystal, and they're all so special and unique. And when enough of them fall, all magic happens. Just so wonderful. So just got back from Canada, and the snow was phenomenal and got great weather and had a great New Year's run skiing in British Columbia. The Pacific Northwest is classic Cascade concrete. But my understanding is Tahoe is going to get it and feet of it. It's been a great season in the West. The Northeast is due for a huge storm as well. So, I'll try to contain my, passion and enthusiasm and limit the snow report, maybe in future editions, but this is a particularly exciting one because I'm just fresh off this, this trip and experience I've been on. So
for sure. Skiing is, oh man, if we could ever do one of these podcasts from the ski slopes, I think that would knock out a couple bucket list items. It's we got our, I'm in the snow belt, I guess, but we got 5 inches over the weekend, and they're talking about maybe another 5 potentially this weekend. And I have a daughter who's 5, and we had a blast outside. She got her first kind of real sledding into the year and honestly, probably in her life that she'll remember. And it's a fun time as long as there's enough snow on the ground.
I agree. I totally agree. And really, you don't have to go out and go crazy in the mountains. You can just go for a walk in the snow and hear the snow crunch under your feet or shovel the walk and, you know, get some nice exercise and fresh air, albeit in colder weather rather than sunshine.
It's It's a magical time of the year as long as you have snow on the ground. I'm not a huge fan of the winter when there's no snow, but when there's snow on the ground, I'm outside playing. It's fun.
I completely agree. And unfortunately in Seattle, we don't get that much snow in town, right? It's a once or twice a year kind of experience. And when it does happen, everything comes to a standstill and everyone freaks out. But you know, it's all the more magical because everything just kind of seems to slow down. A different pace kind of takes over and things kind of go a different way. So we love it.
Very much. Very much appreciate your time today, Aaron. And for everybody else, Aaron will be back, a regular scheduled guest happening every month. So we've got a lot to talk about throughout the year. But for everybody else, make sure to hit that subscribe button down below. Join us for the year adventure. We've gotten a lot of good feedback about how new topics and things for 2019. And it should be an excellent ride. And thanks for tuning in. And Aaron, if anybody has any questions or wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Either hit us through the info form on our website at smartdeploy.com or throw me an email. Absolutely. Suzuki@prowesscorp.com.
There you go. And you'll find a link to Smart Deploy in the post description if anybody else needs help with that. But Aaron, thanks for your time. And we'll catch everybody else right back here next time.
Yeah.